I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You heard Earl play a couple of cuts. He listened to the press conference, so you know what he thinks about Sanchez today. But I am hearing that he got rave reviews. In and of itself, what you say at the podium on a Wednesday or a Thursday just doesn't mean a whole lot. How you play is how people are going to remember you in Washington. But apparently he's got fans ready to run through walls. I'm getting texts from my brother and Redskins fans that heard the press conference.
We're in the room, baby.
So let's do this. 15 minutes from now at 1:18, we will play a good chunk of that Mark Sanchez press conference for you. He's your new starting quarterback. The Mark Sanchez era has begun. So we'll do that coming up next segment. Right now, though, Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Nick Pecoro is a great baseball writer who does an awesome job covering the Diamondbacks for the Arizona Republic. Of course, Arizona is where Patrick Corbin has been playing throughout his career. The Nats yesterday signing the left-handed starter to a six-year deal for $140 million. And Nick's been covering him dating back to his early seasons in the big leagues. So why don't we start with this? First of all, I appreciate the time, Nick. Do you think Patrick Corbin is worth 6 years and $140
million? I mean, no, probably not. I mean, is any free agent starter worth the money that they get paid? Like, it almost never works out that way. He was really good this year, and he was really good for the vast majority of last year as well. I like him. I mean, I want him in my rotation. I was definitely surprised by that number. It was a bigger number in terms of both dollars and years than I was expecting.
So the renaissance kind of happened this year, it seems like. Nick, he threw a slider more than he ever had before, and it was a devastating pitch. It was one of the major league's most effective pitches, if you're just kind of looking at some of the ancillary numbers that go with it. How has he kind of morphed over his career from, you know, middle of the road, pretty decent starter, had one good year a few years ago, to dominant left-hander, now worthy of this kind of contract?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a little bit – there's just definitely been some ups and downs throughout his career. I think if you go back to that first full season he had in the rotation, I think it was 2013, he suffered the injury in 2014, needed Tommy John surgery. But if you go back to 2013, I want to say the first 4 months of that season were probably as good of a four-month stretch as he's had in his career. He fell off at the end, not sure exactly why. But back then, I mean, it was always that slider. That was always the pitch. I mean, I remember Todd Helton was the first guy that really kind of opened my eyes to how good the pitch was. He said after a game that it was the best left-handed slider he'd ever seen. And he said he put it right up there with the one that Randy Johnson threw. Wow. And that's pretty impressive when you're talking about a guy that, you know, Randy had a good 5 miles an hour on him. When you're comparing the two pitches, they're obviously different pitches. But you know, Corbin has gotten better and better with that pitch actually since then. I think something that he's learned to do is he's learned to add and subtract from it. It's almost like he's able to take so much off of it that it's like he has a second pitch. It's like it's a curveball as well. So he can throw it four strikes, but really I think the thing that he does best and the thing that he learned to do best this year is realize that he doesn't really have to throw it for strikes to get strikes. I want to say he was among the pitchers in the league that threw the fewest number of strikes. What I mean is pitches in the zone, because guys would chase that pitch. They just can't lay off. It's just one of those pitches where you're like, a lot of times you're like, you know, it's coming, and you know that this guy, you know, probably is thinking to himself, okay, I'm going to get a slider. I got to lay off. And he just can't stop himself from swinging at it and chasing.
Is last season a career year, or who he is now?
That's a good question. I think that as teams did start to see him more and more, you did see more clubs showing some patience on that pitch and laying off and maybe forcing him into the zone a little bit more and maybe creating a little bit more loud contact. So that's something he's going to have to adjust to. Also, I mean, he threw that pitch, the slider, 40% of the time. As I mentioned, he had Tommy John surgery in the past. that's a lot of stress on your elbow. I think that he's really going to need to probably learn to come up with some different weapons, some different ways to attack hitters to maybe, you know, add some longevity to his career. But I mean, I don't know. What's interesting was at the beginning of last season, his fastball velocity was a couple of miles an hour up from where it had been. It fell off, and his effectiveness didn't seem to matter. If he can figure out maybe a way to maintain that velocity, you know, and kind of mix in some different pitches, I don't see why he wouldn't be able to you know, be this good going forward as long as he can stay healthy.
Patrick Corbin's a 29-year-old former second-round pick coming off of a year in which he finished fifth in Cy Young balloting and made an All-Star team for the second time. Nick Pecoro covers him and did in Arizona. Now, of course, he's with the Washington Nationals, 6 years and $140 million. Nick, you know him in the clubhouse as well. What kind of guy is he? What makes him tick? What can you tell us about the non-baseball player?
He is a really good guy. He is a hard worker. He's well liked by his teammates. He's not like the most colorful dude. He's a really just a simple guy. You know, I think basketball is kind of his first love. I think that was the sport that he liked the most when he was growing up. They would play basketball. I know his father built them like a deck in the backyard, and everybody from the neighborhood would come over and play. I was thinking about that actually yesterday after he signed that deal, that like, I don't really have a lot of great Patrick Corbin stories. He's just kind of a guy that's quiet, goes about his business. I mean, but a really good person, like, you know, just a kind of guy you want to be around. He's a nice guy.
Nick, whenever I look at a hitter from Colorado, just figure out if they're a good hitter or not, like a really true good hitter. I go, what do they do on the road? Right. So a guy that hits, you know, at 360 in Colorado with 30 of his 36 homers, they go, that guy's aided. I kind of had a different experience looking at Corbin and some other guys. Arizona's a tough place to pitch, or it has been most of his career, but he's been much better in Arizona than on the road. Last year kind of was an exception to that. What do you make of that in general? I mean, Arizona's, again, one of those, it's not quite Colorado, but it's close in terms of what's the offense that takes place there. But he was better at home most of his career. What do you make of that?
I don't know. I hadn't really noticed that, to be honest. In terms of last year, they did add the humidor to the ballpark, and that might have affected the way that, you know, balls in play traveled. I don't really have a very good answer for that. I feel like a lot of times the home road stuff is, I mean, certainly Colorado is a different animal, and I think you're right at times that Arizona can be as well. I almost feel like we sometimes fill in just kind of a narrative, even if we don't have a good explanation for something when it comes to that stuff. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
Nick Pecoro does a great job covering the Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball for the Arizona Republic. Thanks so much for the time and the information on Corbin. It helps us a lot.
Thanks, Nick.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Try to provide some insight on the Nats' newest free agent addition. Mike Rizzo has been busy so far this offseason. Signed Kurt Suzuki to be the starting catcher, 2 years and $10 million. Then traded for Yan Gomes to be the starting catcher. So Suzuki becomes the backup. My guess is some type of split along the lines of 95-65, 160, something like that.
And you're going to need both of them. I mean, you'll need organizational depth. Catchers get hurt. That's the position of attrition in Major League Baseball, especially nowadays.
Pedro Severino got his chance, did nothing with it. He's expendable. You want him, you could probably have him at this point. Spencer Keboom, really good, I thought, throwing runners out from a knee, strong arm, but offensively is fairly limited. And so he'll be in the organization, presumably, although someone, I guess, could make a call on him if they wanted to. But you've got your two catchers at the major league level that you've added this offseason. In the rotation, Corbin now slots in behind Scherzer and Strasburg. So you got Max as your ace, Stras as your two, Corbin as your three. A competition after that between Joe Ross, Tanner Roark, Eric Fetty, among others, for the last two spots in the rotation. I want to add one more starter. It doesn't have to be a super expensive starter. I'm talking the one-year, you know, Dan Heron, $12 million deal.
Find another Hellickson, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah. By the way, I would, like, that's a guy, had he been healthy or if he's healthy, that's exactly who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Bring in a guy, if they go five innings and have to be pulled out of the game as the fifth starter, no problem with that. Between whoever that pitcher is, and I'm looking at a guy like a Lance Lynn type. With Roark, with Ross, with Fetty, I think your rotation at that point is probably good enough. The bullpen, you've got Doolittle closing games. They have brought in Kyle Bearclaw from Miami can pitch in the seventh inning. They've added Trevor Rosenthal, who will work in the eighth. They've still got Coda Glover. I'll believe it when I see it with him now.
Thank you. Justin
Miller coming off of his best season. Matt Grace to get lefties out. I loved what I saw from Wander Suero. And then you got a competition of the kids. Now, I wasn't impressed with Jimmy Cordero, but he's got a lively arm. I love Austin Williams. They called up end of last season. Austin Voth, to me, is not worthy of a roster spot, but he'll compete.
Sure.
So right now, give me a starter and give me a second baseman. You've got Soto, Robles, and Eaton left to right with Michael Taylor as your fourth outfielder by the end of the year. Taylor probably begins the season in center field. Rendon at third, Turner at short, Zim at first with Kendrick as your bench bat at a couple of those spots. I don't think you have your starting second baseman on the team. I don't want to begin the year with Wilmer Defoe.
I don't either. And the Kendrick health situation is going to play into this because I get the sense, maybe there's some optimism internally in the organization, that you can just get by with somebody, whoever that is. It's a combo of Kendrick and Defoe and someone we haven't even thought of yet for 65, 75 games maybe. And then it's young Carter Kieboom's turn to come up and be the everyday second baseman. That's optimistic. It's bullish, but they like him and they should. Maybe that's where they're trying to go. So you don't want to invest in a 3 or 4 year second baseman to block him. I just think your window is right now when you've got Max Scherzer, Strasburg, and now Corbin at the top. I'm making that move, even if it's at the expense of Kieboom's development.
Don't roll your eyes, but I want you to hear the Mark Sanchez press conference next.
I'm telling you guys.
And I defy you not to like what you're hearing and not to root for this guy. He won the room. He will win over your hearts. And then he'll probably go out and go 0-4. But first, listen to the press conference next on Grant and Dan. I'll be annoyed if he throws a pick, when he throws a pick. He takes a couple sacks, and it won't be his fault. He's been here for 16 days. He didn't ask for Alex Smith to get hurt. He didn't make Colt McCoy break his leg. He's just the guy trying to pick up the pieces. Here he was in Ashburn, answering questions from Redskins reporters like whether or not he's seen an injury situation like this in his lengthy NFL career.
When the injury bug hits, sometimes it hits hard. But like I said at the beginning, there's no excuses. It's next man up. When you get your opportunity, go and make the most of it. I do think it's very important that you respect the players that did go down, and you respect them by studying, preparing, and going out and executing your job. And part of that is, in a way, it's in their honor. You know, you want to do it right because that's the way they would have done it. And then you get guys around you understanding, you know, guys who've been here a long time, Vernon Davis, the guys, Trent Williams, guys like that, helping new guys, talking to them, knowing that, yeah, I got a job and they could just stay in their lane, but also understanding, hey, man, this guy's new next to me. We got a new quarterback. Hey, man, this is how we do the cadence. This is how we do this kind of formation. Hey, don't forget to tag so-and-so. Hey, I'm going to be a little flatter on this because of that. Here's how we've kind of done in the past, just bringing guys along. And I've seen that in this locker room. There's guys that there's a great camaraderie on this team. And they really understand that we're down some guys, next man up, and let's roll.
How surreal is this for you? Because, you know, 3 weeks ago, you said the other day, you're on your couch watching these games. Now you're up here and you're in charge.
I was working out a little bit.
Okay. What? Watching the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Come on, man.
Working out a little bit. But how surreal is it, though, to go from that to now in the position you're in where you're the guy leading this team down the stretch?
Sure. It's, listen, in some ways, 2 weeks ago, it was an unfamiliar position, but really, historically, it's a familiar position. And that's what makes it fun. You work for something, you pray for something, and then it finally happens. You don't care what the circumstances are. You're just happy to get a shot, and not to prove anything to anybody else, just for you and the guys that I've just met, that I've grown close to in just a few days. You want to play well for them. You want to play well for the guys selling out, pushing for first downs like Jordan Reed did the other day, for that 2 minute drive that we had before the half. That kind of stuff is huge to put. New guys in there, a new quarterback, and go and execute a 2 minute drive. That's not easy now. So, and it took a lot of help and a lot of extra effort from players. So, it's a great situation. I couldn't ask for anything better, and I'm excited. I'm excited about it.
Because you got to learn the playbook, you learn the plays, but you also have to learn these players. So, how do you can get up to speed and you can study at night
right,
learn the
right.
playbook. How do you catch up learning the receivers that you now have?
You know, it's funny, you hear a lot of the old coaching adages and guys are talking about running certain routes, and you know, in my head I'm thinking how I've seen this guy run a route or whatever, and I just keep reminding myself, you know, you're not running the line on the page. You're running the route. These guys are going to run their routes. They're going to have their nuances, and it's going to be up to us to get a couple extra reps here and there, talk about some stuff, watch some tape together, and whatever it takes to get the completion, to get the first down, to put us in field goal position, to put us in scoring position, we got to do it. And we have, like I said, we have a bunch of guys that that are really championing the cause, and you know, they know what to do. They know how to bring other guys along, and we're excited to work together.
Hey, Mark, you said after the game that guys you didn't even recognize yet were, you know, coming up to you showing support. When you think
don't
about,
ask me their names now.
That's, when you think about these next 4 weeks, what does that mean to you, knowing that you have this team's support, considering you are the third starting quarterback for this team?
Well, it's huge. And whenever your peers recognize, one, they recognize the situation, and two, they understand how hard I'm willing to work, that means a lot. And peer recognition is, in my opinion, the most important thing, especially when you get to the top of your profession. You know, these guys are the best of the best. And everywhere they come from, they're the all-star. Their names, their jerseys are hung up in their high school gyms, you know. So when those guys start to recognize, hey, man, this guy's here to work. He's here to win. He's on board, and he'll do whatever it takes. That means the world to me. And so they've just reciprocated that to me. And we'll just keep our head down and work, and I'm learning along the way as well.
Hey, Mark, when Alex went down and Colt took over, he kind of addressed the team, said, you can count on me, I'm ready to do this. You don't have the same relationship with these guys, but have you talked to the team at all just moving forward here?
Nothing formal. And, you know, listen, these guys are pros. And, you know, not to downplay or patronize anything, it's just I don't know if now's the time for some sort of rah-rah speech or, you know, a Friday Night Lights type of deal. You know, it's just, hey, man, we're here to play ball. This guy knows how to play. He's done it before, meaning me. And let's go execute. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens when we put ourselves in a good position. Let's see what happens when we execute on a third down and get ourselves to third and manageable without some of the procedural penalties and stuff like that. So guys understand what's at stake, and there was no real need other than just individual stuff with guys. As I see certain things, the way I see the field, the way I see certain reads, you know, those kind of things, I'll grab a guy here or there. Hey, here's what I'm thinking. Unless we get, you know, whatever coverage, I'm going here to here to my back, whatever. And they understand that.
And who are some of those guys? Jordan or Doxson?
Yeah, I mean, all those guys, all the targets, right? Whether it's handoff, mesh points with AP and Bibbs and Marshall. Yeah, it was a pretty good handoff, huh? AP and that was crazy. That was unbelievable. I mean, I saw him make the cutback, and I was like, oh, okay, AP, get loose. Oh, my God. I'm looking around for flags like, holy crap, this is awesome. So I'm glad I wasn't mic'd up. That was really funny. But, yeah, you know, you just – As plays come up, as thoughts come up, different coverages we're going to face, and we know this defensive coordinator. I mean, this guy's good. He's been good in Arizona. He's great in New York. He's got some serious players, and these guys know how to play. So we got to be sharp. There's no like I said, there's no excuses. It's not he just got here. It doesn't matter. On third and five, you got to convert, and that's the bottom line. They're going to judge you just the way they judge everybody else, even if everybody was healthy. Week, whatever it is, you're going to get a W or an L, and you're going to get, you know, a completion percentage. You're going to get all that. And so these guys know, and we'll be ready to go.
How many plays did you have available maybe roughly on Monday when you came in?
Oh, geez, I don't know. We moved on. Yeah. Listen, it was limited. Let's just say that. It was limited. We did the best we could. And now you got to move on. And with this extra time, understand that we expect more. And from ourselves, from myself, I expect more, and the coaches feel the same way. So,
yeah, and how far can you take it in 1 week, and how, what's that meeting look like with Jay as far as figuring out what that comfort level is?
Oh, man, you know, there's certain concepts that coach likes, that I like. A lot of those, you know, just kind of create a little Venn diagram there and whatever lands in the middle, you know. What our guys do well, and I'm really in a great spot because the coordinator, the quarterback coach, they know me really well, but they also know these players, and they understand, they can relay some of that information, like, hey, when he runs this specific route, just be ready for this as an indicator or whatever it is. And there's a million nuances that you never are going to completely grasp, but enough to play a game and play well.
Of the things associated in fans' minds when Mark Sanchez's name comes up, there are good things, high draft pick.
Sure.
the playoff runs with the Jets those 2 years to the AFC title game. There's also a certain fumble in the nationally televised game that...
I'm not following.
did that bother you that comes up still to this day? Do you laugh about it as you just did?
Like I said, what are you going to do? I mean, it was a crappy play in a game where we're getting our butts kicked. You know, some low-hanging fruit, so that was an easy reach for you. I'm just kidding. Come on, you can give it to me. I can get right back. Come on now. Thick skin in here, huh? No, listen, it's who cares? It's one play, and you just move on. I prefer to remember the good stuff. You seem like a doomsdayer, so.
Doomsdayer. Wow. Mark Sanchez putting on a clinic with the media. This train is leaving the station whether you wanted to or not. He's the conductor. We're headed toward playoff town. Who's getting on?
He's got a cool way to open three beers at once with his elbow. You know what I mean? Like what a fun dude.
Now I know why he's not that good at football. He's amazingly good looking. He is really personable and has a wonderful personality. You can't do everything,
no,
right?
No, you can't have everything. It's not fair.
He couldn't have. Yeah, that's right. Get on the boat, baby.
You can't break the boat out for this.
Yeah, get on the boat. No. We're leaving port. We're headed to get fish.
Not doing it.
Mark Sanchez, boys and girls.
You can't just do it because the Capitals did it.
He is our captain.
Oh, God.
And with Mark Sanchez, we will all get fat and eat for weeks.
When he was coming out of for the draft, I thought he was Matt Leinart 2.0. Leinart just wanted to not shave for 2 days, put a visor on, and chase chicks in hot tubs.
How was he not Matt Leinart 2.0?
That's who I thought it was.
Well, point is, what has happened that makes you think otherwise?
He had NFL success, you would say. Was part of two good teams. He was on the teams.
He did play on teams that had a little bit of success.
I think that's the difference to me. He's still in the league. Leinart's just like, what's up? How you guys doing, Matt Leinart? I want him to play well.
That was fun to listen to.
Wasn't it fun?
Go get you a win, Mark Sanchez. We're all pulling for you. May the Lord be with you.
Good luck. We're all behind you.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Jerry Brewer, The Washington Post, on Sanchez as the Redskins starter. Josh Johnson coming in. No Colin Kaepernick. And whether or not we can finally put this whole Reuben Foster thing to bed, even though there's a new story out last night that the Redskins are still commenting on Reuben Foster. You're listening to The Fan.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Grant and Danny welcoming you back on 106.7 The Fan. 25 minutes from now, Chad Dukes versus the world comes your way. Little CDVTW installment. I keep thinking today is Thursday, but it's Wednesday, so Thursday Night Football is tomorrow. We're still a day ahead of Foosball.
Now, that's different than what happened before when you thought Thursday was Wednesday.
They're the same day, apparently.
Right?
Inexplicably.
Because isn't that what happened? Then you reverse it? Because remember that for that time where you kept saying, tomorrow night on Thursday Night Football, why are we having people on to talk about fantasy?
This is a new thing. This is a new ring.
Now, this one's new.
Jerry Brewer is not new to this show. We love having him on. He's on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Columnist in the Washington Post, writing about all things D.C. sports. And, of course, during the fall, his heavy lifting is done on the Redskins. Mark Sanchez just put on an absolute clinic in his press conference. As I said on Twitter, though, the rub is that at some point he's going to go out there and play a football game with an offense he doesn't know at all 16 days after he was added. Your thoughts on Sanchez taking over for Washington?
Well, you're right. I mean, he wins every interview that he does. I mean, he's a fantastic talker. I didn't realize that about him just because he's been out of the limelight for so long, but it is interesting to hear him speak. But actually quarterbacking this team and this situation is another story. And unfortunately, I think there are some harder times coming for him than what we saw on Monday night, and maybe even some more embarrassment coming from him unfortunately. But I think he'll do the best that he can. But, I mean, we're talking about a team that had suspect weapons when they were healthy. We're talking about a team that you know, had some concerns about certain areas of the offensive line when they were healthy, and now they're not healthy, and now you've got a guy off the street who's trying to help keep you in a division and in a playoff hunt, and it's just the impossible task.
We went months on this show without talking about Colin Kaepernick. We basically deal with what is, not what could be. We're not necessarily trying to solve society's problems with the Washington Redskins. That said, yesterday in his conference call, Jay Gruden did bring up Kaepernick. He said that they considered him, that they wouldn't be signing him. Your thoughts on going with Josh Johnson and the fact that they at least considered Kaepernick?
Well, I'm calling BS on the explanation because I think there are certain things they do in their offense that would have been easily applicable. And I think, you know, I can call him your colleague at The Athletic. Mark Bullock did a really good job of just kind of explaining some simplified things that Kaepernick could do within Jay Gruden's offense that's already there. So I call BS on some of the explanation of it. I think again for Kaepernick, for Josh Johnson, for Mark Sanchez, even for Colt McCoy, I mean, this situation is really tough on a quarterback, and I don't think there's anybody necessarily that could come in and elevate this team. One of the interesting things from a football standpoint on Kaepernick is he would have been able to do some things that maybe would have been surprising that would have helped you eke out a game or two. And I do like the fact that, you know, people forget how electrifying of a runner Colin Kaepernick is. And I think, you know, a la that 90-yard run that we saw from Adrian Peterson, he's a guy who, you make a mistake, he can take it to the house. I mean, he's one of the few quarterbacks in the league that can go 75 yards on just the scramble. And that's something that's forgotten as well. But, I mean, I understand some of the bigger picture things, but I think that Jay Gruden just kind of gave us a kind of a cursory answer instead of a detailed one, which would have made it. I mean, it is much more of a debate than what he wanted to make it. But I also understand he's trying to get his team prepared for this week, and he's not going to go into amazing detail in a one-minute soundbite.
But Jerry Brewer is with us with the Washington Post. Jerry, this isn't 10 years ago when they started 6-2 under Zorn and then collapsed. Where they were mostly healthy. They had most of the core together. Jason Campbell played all 16 games, and Clinton Portis was there, and they had most of their group intact. They had the normal injuries and attrition. You touched on it. This is a disaster. There's no savior coming when you're on your sixth or seventh guard, depending on how you do the calculus. With all the injuries and lack of skill they've got at certain spots, this is impossible for anybody to kind of walk in here and win some of these last couple games or be expected to perform well. If they lose the last four, maybe squeeze out one, it's hard for me as a fan to get disappointed and upset. The flip to that, I guess, is does that buy this regime or anybody in the decision-making role some time because there's a built-in excuse?
Well, I think, Danny, it's always the how. I mean, that's the key piece. You know, we can, in our mind, say, how in the world are they going to get any of these four? If they lose out and it's seven straight losses, how can you blame the coach? There's still the how component. They got a defense that's mostly healthy, and they've got a defense that's given up a little bit under 430 yards over the last 5 weeks. They've got a defense that last year fell off the face of the earth at the end of the year. This month is really key. You know, I mean, if your defense can play like it played in the first 6-7 games of the season, keep you in games, and you're just losing because your offense is an injured mess. Well, that's one part of the story. And how can you really blame anybody under that scenario? But if your defense continues to allow 430 yards, and I think it's 134.4 rushing yards per game is what they've allowed the last 5 weeks. If they continue to do that, then that tells you there's some other problems with your team. And yes, I do understand that the two are connected in that if your offense keeps going three and out and putting your defense on the field, that there's a wearing down factor. but they got to play better. They got to stop punching the ball out and trying to get turnovers and just play good, solid defense. And the turnovers will come as a result of that. They're not playing some of the best offenses in the league moving forward. And so there's an opportunity for them to be competitive in these games. But if we're talking about a team that loses 31-10, you know, 35-7, you know, 44-20, you know, those kind of games down the stretch, then you're going to have the concerns. But if they play competitive, if this looks like a playoff defense and they're just losing because of the offense, then I think you just pause your evaluation and you say, this was not about coaching. This was about injuries. But they have to prove that it's about injuries and not about coaching.
Jerry, so we only have about a minute left, and I want to get to this really quickly with you. I understand. I don't have to agree with it. When Urban Meyer keeps his job at Ohio State based on what he's accomplished, the Redskins are 58-84-1 in 9-plus seasons under Bruce Allen. Some of the best of include the McLuhan saga. He's got three coaches now. The McNabb trade and extension, Griffin's fall from grace, the Cousins fiasco, the Smith trade and extension. I won't even get into off-field stuff like Reuben Foster and the eroding fan base largely despising him. How could he survive a late-season collapse and this Reuben Foster thing? And why would he survive that at this point?
I mean, you know, unless he's got the Ernie Grunfeld trump card, I don't know. I just understand how he could survive this. I mean, but to be serious about it, I mean, I think that is the issue of the last month of the season. And Bruce Allen put himself back into the limelight at the worst possible time. And it's not just the bringing in of Reuben Foster, it's the handling of it. I mean, there it has been a PR disaster of his own doing. You know, everybody always wants to try to blame Tony Wiley and the PR staff. They're the ones who did this, and Bruce is the one who approved it. He's the guy who's the man in charge, and he's the one who decided, I'm not going to try to go out and defend myself to the larger media, and I'm just going to leave it to Doug Williams and all my lieutenants. And it's been a disaster. And you look at that disaster and you put it as you laid out, Grant, you put it with all the other things. And you say, man, 9 years of this, how can you not make a move? And that's why Jay Gruden is not in the crosshairs right now, but he's tied to whatever decision that they make on the periphery, I think. But that is the number one issue of December. You have to get that guy out of there. If you don't, there is no hope for this franchise.
Jerry, you're the best, buddy. Appreciate the time, man. Enjoy the rest of the week.
All right, take care.
Read Jerry's work at the Washington Post. Grant and Danny, couple of leftovers to hit. Tough loss for the Caps last night. Wizards news as they get ready for action this evening. And the Nats have a new pitcher. You're listening to The Fan. Chad Dukes versus the world in 10 minutes. We're Grant and Danny. It's Mark Sanchez, press conference day.
Die.
I will say, this doesn't mean anything. It will result in nothing. But Redskins fans are feeling Mark Sanchez right now.
Dude, he's fun. He's likable.
I wonder why he wasn't a bigger deal in New York. I don't even remember when the Jets were getting to AFC championship games with him as their quarterback. I don't remember him as like a household superstar athlete all over all the pages of their newspapers
their
and
tablet stuff. Because
he's got the look. He's got the personality.
He's a fun guy.
He is definitely a fun guy.
Well, remember, Jeeps, they were killing him because he was dating a girl that was really young at one point. And
he's
that was a
fun
thing.
Guy.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was one of those, the type of thing that I just don't care about generally.
He ate a hot dog on the sideline.
That time.
He's a fun guy.
There was something to do with picking his nose, or he picked someone's nose or something. I think he was viewed as super immature or childish, basically, was the bit. Now, he came off as very playful and kind of going back and forth with the media today. Immature is a word that got thrown around with him. Like, why would you, as the CEO of the organization, be eating a hot dog on the sideline?
Yeah.
There was a lot of dumb stuff like that that got used against him. But he was the starter for four seasons, by the way. I mean, he missed two games in his first 4 years he played year in and year out. Now, since then, starting in 2013, he's basically just held a clipboard other than a half season after an injury with the Philadelphia Eagles. But for 4 years, he was a top 10 pick, who was a starter, who half the time quarterbacked teams that got to the AFC Championship game. Now, he is the ultimate shot against the he wins the game, though.
He was in the room while games were won.
I mean, I could pull up if you wanted me to, and we won't waste time. But I could pull up, like, the 2010 Jets playoff run numbers for him. They weren't great.
No. Of course they're not great. He's not good. Everyone needs to settle down on that. But he was on his way to, like, Derek Jeter-like status, minus the incredible production.
What if he had a big game on Sunday?
Oh, my God.
I don't know that that's even possible because, again, he knows. Gruden said in his conference call, this is not a number I'm making up. Gruden said, he knew about 10% of the playbook against the Cowboys. He's probably up to 20% against the Eagles, so we'll try to add that out a little bit this week. So let's say he gets up to 30% of the playbook. 30%.
Mm.
Of those plays now, you take the ones he likes the most, you set them aside, you take the ones he doesn't like or he's not comfortable with, you take those away, maybe a quarter of your playbook is at your disposal on Sunday.
But allow me to add to this, an addendum, if I may. Knows is not the same as executes at a high level. In other words, you're generally aware of what the words mean and where a receiver may generally end up on, you know, Xerxes XZB28 with a right wiggly poo. That means that this receiver does that, that receiver does that, that receiver does that. Well, did you do the adjustment for if the, it looks like the pressure is three guys going to come from the left? Did you do the Larry? Did you do the pressure come from the right? Did you do the double A gap? Make sure the running back's in the right spot. There's so much layer of complication that goes into a modern NFL football play that has nothing to do with, the X receiver runs an out, the slot receiver runs a wheel, and this guy, sits down at 7 yards in the zone. It's a completely different universe. It ain't high school. It's not college even. It's a totally different animal. It's a lot.
You want a Mark Sanchez playoff line and a win?
Yeah.
First one I found.
It's going to be a zero touchdown, one pick, 158-yard kind of bit.
You're so close.
I'm sniffing it, right?
First one I found, just the first game I clicked on.
He just wins.
He threw for a .189, no touches, one pick, rating of 62, scrambled for 6 yards in a impressive, offensively laden 17-16 victory over the 10-7 Indianapolis Colts.
Is that still a Curtis Martin situation where he just lost so many steps but still ran for like 1,300 yards?
That wouldn't have been Curtis
Martin. Is that still Curtis Martin? You sleep on how many extra years Curtis Martin played.
No, that wouldn't have been Curtis Martin, would it? 2010 Jets?
No, he's long gone. He's gone in 05. So it's 2010 you're looking at?
2010 Jets leading rusher was Sean Green. Remember him?
Of course. But Sean
spelled
weird.
Actually, I'm wrong. I sleep. LaDainian Tomlinson. I didn't even know LT had a 900-yard season. Do you remember that?
What? That was... No. LaDainian... No. Was it really? LaDainian Tomlinson in 2010 was the leading rusher?
He rushed for almost 1,000. They had Sean Green go for 700, and then Joe McKnight, who I believe is tragically no longer with us. Am I wrong about that?
Doesn't I hope sound I'm like not. You're speaking out of school. I think that's correct.
I hope I'm not wrong about that, but goodness. I'm pretty sure that's the case.
Dude, I completely forget about the... Because Sean Green's the guy I remember off that team, right? Because Sean is spelled with two N's.
That's right.
And no A.
Redskins it's survivor
Sean.
Time.
Sean.
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 Who's getting voted off the island? Who's getting immunity? We do it every single week. You vote at facebook.com/Grant and Danny. Your vote matters. We hand out stickers when you vote. You have to post them on Instagram or it didn't happen. You voted in Redskins survivor. Tommy, what did we find out?
We also have stickers that say, yo vote, if that's more your speed.
I want that.
I had to do the tabulation today because Dar is not with us this afternoon. And it was a landslide for immunity with AP. Almost won unanimously. Adrian Peterson gets immunity.
Has he been immune for half of their games?
Multiple times, man.
Every other week, I feel like, because you can't do it two in a row. So AP is safe. Who's going home?
He is safe. DJ Swearinger voted off of Redskins Island. It did get contentious towards the end with votes coming in for Daron Payne and Zach Brown, but DJ Swearinger had such a heavy vote count in the early stages when the early districts were reporting. So DJ Swearinger off the island.
So John King was at the board, and he told me that he didn't think Swearinger would hold on because a couple of the counties that were out were going to vote heavily.
Right, like West Palm Beach County. That was going to come
he
in later.
Him. He knows the counties.
He said Deron Payne was going to win those counties. He was sure of it. So with about 17% of the precincts reporting, he said Payne was going to be fine and he was going to be voted off. But instead, Swearinger gets the nod. I'm surprised by that, by the way. Swearinger didn't necessarily do anything wrong on Sunday. He didn't have a bad game. He didn't do anything all that right. Didn't
no, nothing
make
specific
any plays.
With him, I would say.
But all he's done is have a pretty strong season. But we're at the point of the year now where you basically are saying, who do I like more? And I guess Deron Payne's a rookie. He hasn't hurt you as badly for 2 years. So you just decide, you give him the benefit of the doubt.
So the easiest thing to do is vote someone off when they don't play well. That's pretty simple, right? Hey, this guy dropped a couple passes, or he didn't run routes, or he was hurt, whatever. That's easy. It gets harder now, as you just said. Here's the other part, though. It's the, who's annoying me? Who am I annoyed by? Maybe it's the guy that does this after every game that, you know, calls out the players. Then we're calling out the practices. Now we're calling out the coaches. Now I get called out. You get called out. Sean got called out. Sean didn't do anything. And he got called out.
Poor Sean.
Poor Sean.
Shown.
Speaking of Sean,
Shown.
Thank you for your hard work today, buddy.
Thank you,
and
buddy.
To Thommy as well. Dar's back in the saddle tomorrow for Danny M. Grant saying so long. If you missed any part of today's show, including in it. A heated exchange with our pal Mike Tenier.
Absolutely.
As well as a fun conversation with Nick Pecoro, who covered Patrick Corbin in Arizona. Go to grantanddanny.com/audio.
Chad's here. Patrick Corbin slider usage 4.5 hours next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.